You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Dave Cohen. Dave is a quantum biofeedback practitioner and trainer, as well as a teacher in spiritual communication and the art of dowsing. He has authored two books, Navigating the Collapse of Time and Dowsing Beyond Reality.
Duality.
Oh, yeah. Good. It's a good thing he's on the line to fix that.
I'm checking up on you.
All right. That's a good thing. He's presently working on a third book, which will be coming out soon, hopefully. He and his wife, Arena, are committed to the global awakening and in empowering us to remember who we are. I got to experience his work firsthand today through a clearing/reading, and I highly recommend his work. Everybody should be doing this. You can sign up for his newsletter, read the articles, and check out the various offerings and classes on his website, which is www.bluesunenergetics.com.
I
got that right.
Net.
Good. Net. Okay, net. Okay, my mind is a little bit off tonight. All right, we got it. And so we'll repeat that at the end of the show. But in the meantime, let's get him out here so we can actually talk about stuff now. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hi, Lance. Good to hear from you again. And, it was a great time connecting earlier today.
Yes, I really, you have such a powerful, I don't know what you'd call it, but it's a really powerful way of communicating. It's relaxing. It's empowering, and it's clear. You've got great clarity and abilities. And that was a wonderful reading that I had with you today. That was really empowering. I mean, that was what I had really been hoping to get from somebody. And through a mutual friend of ours, she introduced me to you and said that you've got to find out about Dave Cohen. He's excellent. Get him on the show if you can. And so I'm really excited about having you tonight. Can you describe some of your journey and the techniques that you use in doing your work?
Sure, and I appreciate the feedback as well, Lance. In 25 words or less, it was many years ago when I had, best described as an experience. I had a life-changing experience. It came about as really a half-hearted prayer. I just asked for some spiritual guidance, and man, it just came through like gangbusters. And I was in another altered state for about 3 weeks. It was both fascinating and frightening. And the interesting part about that experience, and this was when I was around 19 or 20, was that when I asked it to go away because it was killing me, it did. And I went, wow, something's listening, something's sensitive. And it's been, decades of trying to discover exactly what that was about and what was the purpose. And I'm just beginning to get a glimmer now of what that really was. And, I always did consider it a foretaste of where we are going as a species. To a multi-dimensional perspective, a deeper understanding of who we are beyond, just the physical, just the conditioning. And so it was a real gift, and it, in a way, it kept me from going mainstream, if you know what I mean. I couldn't just do the mainstream pathway. I couldn't repeat the patterns of my culture and my heritage. I had to go and explore new opportunities and new perspectives. So it really was a gift in that way. And it's been a wonderful journey and continues to be.
Wonderful. Well, we talked a little bit about a mutual friend of ours, Barbara Han Clow, who has interestingly written a little blurb on the back of both of our books. Yours and Mine, Tales of a Zany Mystic, available at Amazon.com. Hurry while supplies last.
Oh, thank you. I'll make a note.
But anyway, she was inspirational to me over the years, and I got to know her a bit. And when she came out with the nine dimensions, the alchemy of nine dimensions, it was a mind-blowing experience. So I have your book here on my desk, and unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read it before the show.
Sure.
But it's definitely on my list of reads next. And then, you know, I'm very interested in your other book as well, because that one has to do with what you do, doesn't it?
Yeah, the first book, Navigating the Collapse of Time, which Barbara wrote the introduction to, is really laying a lot of groundwork, conceptual groundwork, and it evolved out of a talk I used to give at the end of the day to my biofeedback students about my real interests, which was 2012 and the planetary shift and the Mayans and all this, and the talk just got longer and longer as more and more information became available, and someone said, why don't you just write that down? And so that's that book. And, you know, also there's a portion in the end of the book where I describe a vision that came to me in a meditation, that a set of symbols showed up in my mind like a flip card, you know, one of those. And they went really fast. I had to write them down. But as I was writing them down, I realized that they were a codified form of the story of the collapse of time. So that's all covered in that book as well. But the second book, Dowsing Beyond Duality, was kind of the application of the theories laid out in the first book about how we can consciously access these different levels of self, and we are no longer at victim of any of our experiences or circumstances, because we are the co-creators of this experience, this universe. And we're just beginning to grasp that. We're just beginning to come into our power as a species on this planet. You know, the Mayans did say that the whole 2012 thing was really all about us becoming conscious co-creators of realities. That was a direct quote from their, you know, belief system. And what they were saying is that we've always been co-creating our realities. We've always been creating our experiences through our projections and our state of mind, but we've been doing it unconsciously. We haven't been doing it with a true awareness of our potential, and that's what shifted. We're beginning to realize that my thoughts manifest on the level of form, and this sense of collapsing time, of the acceleration of that process, I think is making it easier for us to realize that. You know, in the past, you might have had a desire or a thought, and if it showed up 6 months or a year later, you didn't connect the dots. Now these intentions are showing up the next day, if not the next moment, and we're beginning to see, wait a minute, maybe I'm playing a role in my experiences. Maybe I'm not at effect. Maybe I'm at cause of everything that's going on around me.
Yeah, beautiful. And also, I find that there is a force that seems to be that has established itself, and maybe you can talk a little bit about how you view this projection of the shadow or the unconscious aspect that is directly opposing us waking up, and is actively seems to be, at least at the level of our present awareness, seems to be actively working towards our demise.
I understand what you're saying, and there does certainly seem to be a very obvious duality being played out on this planet, and that's pretty indicative of this dimension, you might say, the third dimension, which is physicality, the fourth, which is the mind. These are dualistic dimensions, and simply that means they are energetic spaces that support opposites. But to really grasp this, and in my own understanding, I've come to a very simple conclusion, because it's easy to get lost in the complexities here and in the language. So to really grasp why that's happening and why we deal with that and what it's all about, you know, we really need to go back to a metaphysical premise as to how we got here in the first place. And as I mentioned to you earlier today, my foundation and the foundation of our work is A Course in Miracles. Now, A Course in Miracles is a unique work in the Western world in that, unlike other established sacred scriptures or doctrines, it's rooted in what we call non-duality. And non-duality is simply the state that appears naturally when we collapse dualities. You could also say it's a synonym for peace. We're no longer dealing or struggling with choices and decisions when we're in the non-dual state. We're in total acceptance of what is in the moment. But to really grasp this, we need to go back to the origins of this state of duality. And again, it's nothing that's happening to us. It's a symptom of our level of mind or what happened to the mind. And so if you could imagine before the Big Bang, all that was existed in a complete union with itself. And it doesn't matter what you call this. You know, you could call it Prime Creator, you could call it Source, whatever. It really doesn't care what we call it. But within that perfection, within that self-enclosed oneness, ultimately a thought had to appear. And that thought was, what else is there? What is outside this perfection? And because that thought came from such a deep creative level of this one mind, you might say, the opportunity to live that out was granted in the Big Bang. So the universe of seemingly separate forms, all the way from separate galaxies down to separate subatomic particles, was the result of our decision as a very powerful creative spiritual being to experience separation. Mm-hmm. Now, when we stepped out of that perfect circle to see what was out there, of course, we kept one foot at home. You know, we weren't
right.
completely committed to the idea, but we lost memory of that connection, and we fell hook, line, and sinker into our own intention. And we've been dealing with this duality ever since. Now, duality, not too surprisingly, is a two-edged sword. On the downside, it's the setup for conflict. You can't have conflict unless you have opposing points of view, opinions, perceptions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, operating within duality forces you to make choices. It forces you to exercise your will. What is it that I truly want, right? Do I want the rewards of more and more separation, or do I want the peace that comes as I turn back and begin to desire that oneness again? So when the will is activated through the suffering inherent in duality, we are actually activating that divine spark, that foot that never left reality, because there's no separation on the level of will. There's a separation on the level of mind. We believe in duality and everything that we've created, but the will, the desire, you could call that love, never changed. So when we, through our suffering, through duality, make a choice for peace instead, that divine aspect of ourselves that is still within reality is awakening even within this illusion of separation.
Wow, that's beautifully said.
Uh-huh.
You should teach some classes. You do.
Hey, what a concept.
Right. That is really nice. So we both have studied a lot from various sources and the end of time and the various cycles and Kelemen and all that.
Yes.
And as you said, we pretty much been fascinated by the whole 2012 phenomenon and these cycles. Uh-huh. And from what I can tell, there have been recurring cycles for millions of years that have repeated themselves. But in this particular cycle, this is an entirely new cycle, because all of the cycles, according to what I've read in the Mayan calendars, have come to an end pretty much around this time, haven't they?
Yeah, it's a grand conjunction of many cycles that we have never seen or experienced, at least in our memory, all occurring simultaneously. So yes, it is unique, and this is one of the challenges of stepping into this new energy, is we're not stepping into the known. We're not stepping into, you know, the ongoing patterns of history. We have to create the roadmap for our experience from this point on.
Well, you know, and unfortunately, there are so many who would create the roadmap for us, you know, with the television and radio and media and advertising and corporations and political concerns and royal families and the rest of it. How do we break the cycle of repetition that seems to be endlessly recurring? Or is it possible that some of us are going to be stuck in another grand cycle again?
That's a great question, and you know, I know that's on the minds of a lot of the listeners tonight as well. And again, we got to go back to that premise. When the mind split between its knowledge of oneness and its belief in separation, we literally created a split in consciousness. And look at the human brain, you know, it's split right down the middle. What a perfect illustration of our state of mind. We call that part that is still within perfection spirit, or the divine. The part that has bought into the separation, however, is simply ego. And ego is nothing other than the set of beliefs that we created out of the expediency to answer the question, who am I? You know, we lost awareness of who we are as perfect, divine, and complete, so we had to make up something to explain our experience, and we made up the ego. So the ego is like a costume we put on to fit in to an insane dream.
Nice, very nice.
And all of those things, all of those things you were describing, right? The corporations, the degradation, they're all manifestations of ego. And I'm telling you, the ego is an illusion and its game is up.
So technically speaking, those of us who are aligning with the spirit and with non-dual systems, which are not really belief systems, but with non-dual reality, we'll see a more of a unification or harmonic process occurring, most likely, rather than a chaotic tearing apart, falling down, and dissolving of the old paradigms.
Exactly.
Although they're both going on at the same time.
Well stated, yes.
Okay.
And again, the world outside is nothing other than a projection of our state of awareness. It's not happening to us. We're not victims of anything other than our own thoughts. And our thoughts are either coming from the conditioning in the past, and therefore the ego, or they're coming from spirit and truth, which is always experienced in this moment.
And how much does the shadow aspect within us, in other words, we're not fully conscious beings. We're partially conscious and largely unconscious, and that varies a great deal from person to person, depending on you know, where you're at and the day of the month and the rest of it. But we're largely manipulated through the unconscious, and there's a shadow aspect that most of us don't acknowledge or allow ourselves to know. In other words, there's an aspect that goes out and does horrible things and then goes home to the family, or does horrible things within the family, and then it's stuffed and hidden and concealed. So that I consider to be the shadow, and that is part of the aspect that creates the projection that manifests in the outside world, is it not?
Yes, and again, we're talking about the projections of the ego, which it sends out to validate its own pseudo-existence. So, but again, it's all about perception and the willingness to choose another point of view. And spirit is eternally patient, because spirit knows this dream was over the moment it was imagined, because it's not possible. And so the spirit... Spirit doesn't really care how many times we go around the merry-go-round, because it knows ultimately the merry-go-round is over. The shadow aspect of the self, however, can provide opportunities for our awakening. Again, the whole world shifts when we give it a new purpose. If we give it the purpose of staying asleep, of staying unconscious, of staying in our state of separation, then our experience will validate and support that. When we give it the purpose of awakening, however, the entire universe hinges on that decision, and all of our experiences now move to support that choice. So once you're on the path, once you put that first foot down in the direction of your awakening, there's no going back, and the outcome is guaranteed.
Right. Do you feel, as some have kind of stated it, that each of us has literally are creating in our own dimension, which is unique to each person?
Well, yes. Within the multidimensional universe, we choose our experiences. They're all happening in a dream state, however, so they're not that coherent. And I like the analogy of a dream to explain this life. You and I actually talked about the movie Inception earlier as being a masterful reflection of how we dream within a dream. Mm-hmm. But as we sleep at night and we have a sleeping dream, no matter how insane that dream might be, no matter how crazy and improbable it is, as long as we are immersed in that dream and it has our attention, that is our reality. We only realize it was just a dream when we wake up. But as a thought experiment, what if when we wake up in the morning, we're waking up from one quality of dream into another? And no matter how bizarre and crazy this dream gets, as long as our attention is pulled here and we're not aware that we're sleeping, then this is our reality. And it's only upon awakening from this dream we realize it has no meaning whatsoever.
Well, now that begs the question, how do we awaken from this dream, and does it require a collective effort, or is this a matter of timing or a combination of many different factors?
Well, we've been given the tools, and our own awareness is what got us here, and it's also the way we get back. And let me explain that. Whenever we have a pleasant experience, this is an experience that resonates with our memory of wholeness. You know, whenever we're joining with anybody over just a conversation or an agreed, you know, experience, there's a sense of comfort in that because it reminds us that we are whole, that we are complete. But when we have an unpleasant experience, an argument, or we perceive danger or whatever, and our peace goes down, right, our internal peace meter drops, you might say, this is showing us an opportunity that there's some aspect of my mind that has created this experience in order to bring to my attention a part of myself that I've not yet healed.
Mm.
So should I choose, I can look at that experience as an opportunity to go within and take full responsibility for my experience. And the pathway was laid out 2,000 years ago through a process called forgiveness. Unfortunately, the ego got hold of that concept and has created, like it does with everything, a pseudo-concept. So forgiveness in the world requires an object or a subject. I forgive you for, and then we fill in the blank, for that rotten thing you did, right?
Right.
And what we're really saying is, I'll never forget what you did, but in my moral superiority, I will forgive you.
Right.
Okay? So that kind of forgiveness doesn't really work. It's kind of glossing over the issue, and we still hold the resentment within ourselves because we hold the memory and we make it real. Yeah. True forgiveness is when we look at behavior as spirit does. You see, spirit, being love, only sees love. And when there's good behavior, spirit sees that as an extension of love. When there's bad behavior, whether it's a sour mood or an atomic bomb, the spirit looks at that as a call for love. Why is that person acting out? Well, because they're not experiencing love. And why would that make them act out? Well, because some part of them knows love and they're not experiencing it now. So to offer the love that that person is asking for, despite our ego's reaction to their ego, to recognize this is only a call for love. You know, bad behavior in adults is not much different than it is in children. And children only misbehave if they're hungry, if they're tired, and their needs aren't being met. So if we could look at the bad behavior of those around the world with the same understanding that this is a call for love, and then be the one who offers that love by overlooking the behavior and seeing the divine being behind it who's trying to wake up, attempting to awaken. And when we do that, we actually heal within ourselves the aspect of our own being which is not yet healed or forgiven that that person is mirroring to us. See, we're all mirrors for each other. We're like a bunch of clowns in a circus of mirrors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find ourselves. Well, it's in the reflection of the feeling state that those relationships offer us that we are sensitized to what is yet to be healed in our minds. And as long as we're here in this dream, as long as we're in the body, there will be opportunities to heal the mind. That's the curriculum in what we call Earth School.
Mm. Well, you know, it does seem, in a way, that our own lives are our best teachers.
Yes.
Yeah, when you look at just about anything with attention and focus, you can use that as a learning experience.
Yes. And quantum physics being, again, a tremendous, how can I say, ally in our understanding, in our awakening, has helped to explain these principles in a very grounded scientific way. And what you've just described is the observer effect. You know, what we're not aware of, what is happening beneath conscious awareness, doesn't tend to change. It tends to stay the same. But as soon as we put attention on whatever it is, change has already begun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, right. And the other thing is that it seems as if synchronicities appear in greater number when we are in that flow of observing and watching our own lives as teachers. So they're almost like landing lights in a runway for a plane.
That's a good analogy.
Sometimes there are so many of them that it's like the tipping point gets reached and you realize, now wait a minute, there have been 50 synchronicities today. I've been counting them.
Yes.
This one, I can no longer deny that this is not an accident. This is far beyond the realm of possibility of things that could accidentally happen, even though my mind wants to tell me that that's what's going on.
Yes, yes. Despite the resistance within, we are blown away by these miracles and connections, and it's quite wonderful to see it happen. But, you know, humanity has been hoodwinked by the ego. It's taught us that we are the pinnacle of evolution, that we are the crown of creation in our current state. And yet, you know, we are just beginning. Bruce Lipton, in his recent book, Spontaneous Evolution, talked about, speaking of cycles of time, he said we're in the same cycle of time, or come around, more like a spiral of time, because hopefully we're going upwards. Mm-hmm. But we're at that same conjunction of energies where eons ago, single-cell organisms on this planet, which were the only form of life for a long time, you know, this was a planet of slime molds, basically. And there was a specific point in time in these cycles, however, where a wave of intelligence informed these organisms, and they all got it simultaneously, that if they combined their single-cell bodies into multicellular plants and animals, they could have a vastly expanded experience of life. We're at that point now where the single-cell organisms are us in our separated individual selves, our ego cells, and this wave of light is showing us, demonstrating to us, that we are truly one, that we have the same source, the same desires, the same essence, and as we combine together, we literally are creating a single, unified planetary being. This is the mark of this age. One of my literary mentors, and actually the gentleman who's written the introduction for my next book, Ken Carey, some of you guys might...
Oh, I love Ken Carey's work.
Yes, and he wrote years ago that the last 2,000 years has been the period of individual awakening. So despite the density of the dream of separation and the experiences of suffering, it has been possible through hard work and dedication for individuals to wake or reawaken into this unity consciousness state, into the realization of oneness. But it took hard work. And usually when that happened, you stuck out in the crowd and nobody wanted to be reminded. And so you were in a sticky position. Mm-hmm. Well, we are now at the cusp and transitioning to a 1,000-year period, shortened by half, of planetary awakening, where this experience of wholeness, of coming back to the realization of our source in oneness, is no longer limited to the individual, but is becoming a collective experience.
Mm.
Do you remember Stanley Kubrick's Space Odyssey, the first one?
Oh, yes.
And remember at the end, the baby floating off into space?
Uh-huh.
That's us.
Yeah, wow.
That's what we're becoming, a new creation.
And there's so much agreement on the idea that we are also joining with the combined intent of our earthly being, call it Gaia Sophia or Mother Earth, whatever you want to call her, that we're combining with this solar system as well, that this is a universal shift.
Yes, yes. We are being given an opportunity to expand beyond the tiny confines of this planet, but it's a progression.
Right.
You know, it took us a long time to realize the Earth wasn't flat. It took us a long time to realize there were people living on the other side. You know, and we've been in this expansion game for a long time. And, you know, when in the 60s, when the astronauts went up and took that first picture of Earth from space, that was the moment of planetary awakening, that there's one planet here that we share. And, oh look, there's no borders. And the countries, they're not different colors. Those maps are lies.
Right, right.
And so, yes, we're being called to that process to continue. And where it's going is we're going to know ourselves as the mind that is dreaming this entire universe. But we do it step by step, stage by stage, so that we can step into this without fear, right? Again, Creator is infinitely patient and knows the outcome, so it allows us the process. But yes, the solar consciousness, the solar energy is definitely presenting it the opportunity now. With the dramatic changes going in on the Earth, the weather changes, which, by the way, have nothing to do or very little to do with carbon dioxide, has everything to do with the sun. But the sun has responded and is reacting to the activation with the galactic alignment, which is centered around the 2012 phenomena. It's actually a process that's taking many years, obviously, but the sun is actually shifting from a yellow star to a white star. It's going through its own natural metamorphosis into a new expression. The physicists are saying that there are new bands of energy coming from the sun that can literally hold the potential to activate our dormant DNA. A lot of this was written about by a German scientist, Dieter Breuer, who wrote a fascinating book called Solar Revolution. And I believe there's actually an online movie as well, that name. And in Solar Revolution, he points out a lot of this research on the changes in the sun, very grounded in science, and refreshingly in European science. But he has drawn a picture that is very convincing that, at least on the physical dimension, the changes in the sun are liberating us from the limitations of our dormant DNA.
Interesting. Well, you know, many say that the sun is definitely a conscious being that is assisting us with raising our level of consciousness, and that would make sense in light of what you're saying.
Yeah, agreed. Yes. Yeah.
And also, I've heard the idea that the Earth is becoming a sun in her own right, a blue star, that she is evolving in her own right, that she will eventually become a blue star. If the idea of the evolution is occurring here in the solar system, then that could indicate that the other planets are evolving in that kind of direction themselves.
Very interesting. I was aware of the Blue Star Prophecy. I mean, that's where we got the name for our website and our company, Blue Sun Energetics. But I wasn't aware that the Earth herself was implied in that image. Thank you for passing that on.
Wouldn't that be interesting if the Hopi and various Native American and Indigenous tribe prophecies indicated the Blue Star Kachina, and they were talking about Earth?
Right. Under our noses all along.
Right. We're on it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, there's life. I mean, this universe is an expression of life. And so everything is alive in its own sense, in its own right, you know, from galaxies to stars to plants and animals, obviously, but all the way down to atoms and subatomic particles. It's all an extension of that life, which was, again, our creation. So we created from that creative level of mind, and that is what is sustaining this experience. So yes, everything is alive, as it is a mirror to us of our own life.
And along with that, I know you must be very aware of the spirit realms that bring a matter to life, or that liven up things. the Devas, elementals, and so on.
Yeah.
That everything has a spirit to it that is alive as well, in addition to the manifestation that we see.
Yes, yes. And the ancients knew this. Of course, they took it for granted. It wasn't up until the Greeks, apparently, that they took ownership of their thoughts. But before that, in human cultures, it was assumed that thoughts were communications from nature.
Right. Mm. I've had that experience myself.
Mm-hmm.
And how do our abilities that it seems we have, that have been eroded, like our psychic abilities, how do those come into play? It seems that we have enormous capabilities and that we've had more effective use of those tools in the past, and that they've kind of reached an all-time low. How do you perceive that?
I agree with the all-time low. Even though we like to think that we are the grand product of progress, from the Hindu perspective, we are just climbing out of the depths of materialism and spiritual ignorance. So, you know, I agree with that. These abilities, these potentials, they lie within each and every one of us, but they're largely dormant, primarily due to lack of use. But I think as we become more devoted to unity, to healing, to correcting the errors, and as we reach out to our relationships and to our world with that compassionate heart, that these gifts ultimately will come back. They're returning to us as we give them a new purpose. Again, the only choice is of purpose is to serve the ego, which is further separation, suffering, or to serve spirit, which is the awakening and the joining. So once we give these ourselves to that purpose of our own awakening and the awakening of everything around us, then these gifts, as they will help to serve that purpose, I believe are coming back online. Ultimately, where we're going is telepathy, where we will no longer require, you know, hardware and software to connect us around the globe, but we'll be doing it spontaneously. These are our training wheels, you know, our new technologies that unify us, and they serve us in that sense. I mean, technology is only ever an extension of a human potential. So if you look at the tremendous technologies that have come through, which I believe are coming from our memory, they're coming from the memory of these times in the past. Some call them golden ages. And some actually consider that these memories are the contribution of our extraterrestrial families through interbreeding, etc. But the information is there. You know, these new technologies aren't showing up out of thin air. They're showing out of our deep genetic memories, which are being activated in these new energies. It's a very exciting time.
No kidding. You mentioned our extraterrestrial connections, and many people believe that we've been under kind of a veil of ignorance about those things, and that there's sufficient evidence that we live in a galactic reality that has trillions of different civilizations and different beings in it besides ourselves, and that we're all interrelated. How do you see that as well?
Well, I see that we have been in quarantine by our galactic neighbors simply for bad behavior. You know, we're the new kid on the block, and until we clean up our yard and, you know, get the junk out and all that, they're not going to invite us into the country club. But, you know, time is up, and they're giving us every opportunity to rejoin that community. As far as the universality of life is concerned, David Wilcock, in his recent work, brought out some very interesting research from the Russians, actually, that validate this notion that DNA, the very DNA in our bodies right now, is a universal life template. And what he said the Russians discovered 30 years ago was that what we assume to be lifeless space dust is 99% of it is freeze-dried bacteria with intact DNA. And that this bacteria is actually being generated off the surface of stars. So stars are propelling this freeze-dried bacteria with intact DNA out into the vast spaces between them. So the entire universe is seeded with this energy. But it goes further. He talked about some research where the researchers took a single-cell organism and suspended it in a test tube of water, and they took another test tube at a distance with nothing but pure distilled water in it, and they passed a laser through the first beaker into the second, and in the second beaker, DNA spontaneously emerged in the water.
Whoa.
So in other words, the laser was able to carry DNA as pure information into a water medium, which then manifests in the physical.
Mm.
So take that experiment and go back to the idea of space being completely littered with DNA. You have the light from a star shining through this DNA in space onto a planet that supports liquid water, and life emerges in those oceans. That's exactly what our scientists tell us happened here.
Wow.
So if it happened here, it must happen on other planets that are in that same Goldilocks zone. You know, the astronomers are only looking for planets now that support water in a liquid state for this reason.
Oh, interesting. Well, I'm sure that, we'll someday discover that the world is not only not flat, but that there are worlds that support life that have other bases for their existence than oxygen and so on and so forth.
Right, and there really are bars like there are in Star Wars, where the where the orchestra is made up of aliens.
I think I've been to a few during this lifetime.
Oh, well, possible.
You mentioned the Hindu teachings. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of things that come out of that were triggered in my mind. One was they talk about the blue gods as and I'm not a scholar on any of these subjects, but there were blue gods, which are very reminiscent of the movie Avatar.
And that's right.
In those teachings, they also talk about the Golden Age, which so many that are knowledgeable say that we are now in. We're anchored
mm-hmm.
in the Golden Age, the very beginning of that. Do you have any feelings or intimations about that?
It seems intuitively correct, mm-hmm. although I do think that this time around, as we mentioned earlier in the call, there's even more going on. There have been previous golden ages where the energies supported the pinnacle, you might say, of human capabilities at that time. But there's something different this time around, something even more expansive, I feel, because those golden ages ultimately did not last. They were still subjects to declines of rising and falling. I think this time around, and they were also isolated to specific geographical areas of the planet, as far as we know, I think this time there's something even more expansive going on, and hopefully doesn't allow us to go back through periods of decline. Hopefully we've graduated from the need to experience these cycles as we have in the past. Again, the future now is wide open. This is the deeper meaning of the collapse of time, is that we are no longer subject to any of these cycles of the past or any roadmap of the past. This is a wide open blank slate. So we can bring the past with us. We can relive those patterns if we want, or we're completely free to choose something entirely different. So this time, I think, is a little beyond the need to repeat those patterns.
Well, that is certainly positive, a positive take on things, and I also share that view. That would also infer the collapse of dimensions and the veils between them, wouldn't it?
Yes. We are becoming multidimensional beings in that we already are, of course. There are many dimensional aspects to our beings. It's just that most of our attention is taken up by the third dimension and our sensory bodies. But what we're talking about is actually becoming conscious of our multidimensional self and being able to operate within those dimensions simultaneously. And this goes back to that experience I told you I had in my early 20s. When I was in that state for that time, it was like I was able to perceive multiple channels of information simultaneously, like sitting in front of a bank of television sets, each on a different channel, but being able to track accurately what was going on in each channel. So as I said, I felt that this was a foretaste of that conscious multidimensional state of which we all have the potential to manifest.
Mm, wow. Oh, I like that vision. That's really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And what are some of the most important pieces of information that you can share with us tonight that you feel will help empower us more rapidly towards this, towards that goal, the shared goal of unity and oneness?
Well, again, it comes back to this practice of forgiveness I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. and it is an individual opportunity. We no longer have to wait for things around us to change. We can become proactive in this process right now by simply choosing to give our relationships a new purpose. This is what my new book is going to be about, and it's going to go into detail about it. But really, you know, this is one of the themes also of A Course in Miracles, that this true forgiveness is the reactivation of the divine vision within ourselves. In a sense, the divine is now seeing through our eyes when we choose to see on that level. And we become an extension of that understanding that love is really all there is, just like the Beatles said. Mm-hmm. So this practice has been popularized recently, and I'm sure you're aware of the Hawaiian practice of Ho'oponopono.
Mm-hmm.
And if any of your listeners aren't, I'll just give it to you in a nutshell because I think it really captures this practice and the opportunity we all have to begin to shift the world within ourselves, and then the world outside, of course, naturally shifts. But in this tradition in Hawaii, back in many ages ago, generations ago, when anybody was out of step, they were out of balance with the community. They could be sick or a victim of an accident or a perpetrator of crime, whatever. The tribe or the community would sit this person down, and everybody in the community would sit around in circles around this person and silently search their own heart for where did I or how did I contribute to this person's suffering. Maybe I, you know, denied them a second helping. Maybe I had a jealous or angry thought towards them or their family, whatever. And as each person came to peace within themselves about that contribution and forgave themselves, they would simply walk away. And at the end of that process, when the entire community had done this, there was always one healed individual left in the center. So this was a very sophisticated healing technique based on the recognition of the one mind, that if you're suffering and you're in my radar, you're in my experience, then your suffering is my suffering. I cannot separate myself from that.
Mm-hmm.
So more recently, a Hawaiian clinical social worker found himself as the night person on a hospital ward for the criminally insane. These were really dangerous folks, had committed terrible crimes, but were found or deemed insane, and so they were in this hospital. Many of them were in shackles, others were on heavy medications. So he didn't have much to do at night, and he thought, well, maybe I'll adapt this practice I heard from my mother or my grandmother. Maybe I'll give that a try. So he would sit and he would take down the files of these individual inmates, and he would simply look at their picture, and he would say four things. He would say to that person, I love you, I am sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. And he'd say that repeatedly as he looked into the eyes of the photograph until he felt a little inner shift, like, you know, I could hang out with that criminal.
Mm.
And then he would put the file back and he'd take another one down, and this is how he passed his time on the night shift. Well, within a few weeks or months, everybody started getting well. No other intervention, nothing changed except this practice. And the people started getting well and started going home. A couple of them were transferred out, you know, to minimum security wings, and eventually they shut down the ward. Now, to me, that is the mark of a good healer. He worked himself out of the job.
Right.
But what he was saying, and it's very important, I think, because you can practice this with a dualistic mindset or a non-dual. And again, we've already discussed what forgiveness and duality is. It doesn't really forget. But the non-dual perspective is this. when you say to that person, and anyone can do this, you don't have to have a picture in front of you, just a mental image of a person. Anybody where when you think of that person, there's a loss of peace, is a candidate for this work. And when you look at that person or you see them in your mind's eye, when you say, I love you, you're saying, I recognize our oneness. We come from the same source. We have the same destiny. And to not love you is to not love myself. And when we say, I'm sorry, again, it's not for what I did or you did or anybody did. It's for the one problem that we're all living in the effects of, and that is our belief in separation. That is the only problem here. And for that, I truly am sorry, because all of our suffering has come from that premise. And then when we say, please forgive me, the word forgive literally means overlook. Please, and this is the catch. Please overlook that the dream of this universe ever happened. That it is please agree with me that this is an impossible dream, therefore it is an illusion, and therefore there's nothing to forgive. And then thank you for showing up in my illusion, in my dream, to give me this opportunity to heal my mind of what you reflect to me, right? The unhealed part of my mind, to heal your mind in the process, and heal the one mind that is the dreamer of this dream. So I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. And the beauty of this practice is you don't have to feel it. You know, forgiveness is not a feeling, that's an effect that comes down the road. It's simply the willingness, or even just the willingness to be willing. That's all it takes, that 1% desire for peace over suffering. Why should I want to hang on to my loss of peace when I think of you, when I can simply offer this gift and heal that for myself and for you forever? So that's the gift, I think, of the Hawaiian culture to this planet, and the opportunity, the empowerment that this gift offers each and every one of us to begin to change the world from the inside out. In the Course, it actually says we don't try to change the world, because it's not real. Rather, we try to change the way we see it. And when we do that, we get what we want. The world does change, but from the level of cause, not from the level of effect.
Right. Wise words. And in essence, the one that's suffering, anybody that's suffering, we're doing that to ourselves.
We're the only ones who suffer from our lack of forgiveness.
Yeah. Yes. Right.
Yes.
So easy to forget. It's easy to remember when we're reminded,
Yes. And
then it's so easy to forget when we're distracted.
Well, it's kind of like two steps forward and one step back, right? That's the duality game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But when you realize that the end is already guaranteed, it turns it into a game. We play at it, right? We don't take it so seriously. Actually, in the Course, it says we got into this mess because we forgot to laugh at the ridiculousness of the notion.
Yeah, right. And it does seem that those who are the most serious seem to be the most, some of the most destructive as well.
Well, and they make themselves sick, and they just dig a hole, and it's just that's the ego solution, right? More and more separation, more and more fear. But the joke is on the ego, because the biggest weapon, the biggest tool the ego has to keep us in limitation is the fear of death. And anybody who's died and comes back knows that that doesn't work. Right?
The
ace up the ego's sleeve doesn't exist because there is no death.
Right. And conversely, there's no birth either.
That's right.
So if we have the understanding that we're infinite and eternal beings of light, then this whole situation that we're in with this seeming limitation of, 50, 60, 70, 80 years is just a blink of an eye in the scheme of things. Not even that.
Yeah.
Not even that.
Yeah. So, to be multidimensional means that we have the freedom to delve into these higher realms, as we are with this discussion, and then to come back into our human experience with a deeper memory and appreciation for that other aspect of self. And the more we do that, the more we play in the different frequencies and fields of opportunity, the more we are integrating within ourselves that one self, that multidimensional self. And in fact, in truth, that's the only being here. There's only one of us here, a dreaming, imagining it is billions of different souls, having the experience of separation, and yet there's really only one of us here who is, devoted to the awakening. This planetary being must come. It's like a pregnancy. You know, once it's started, it must produce a result. And so we're watching that right now. We're seeing it in the form of the dissolving of the institutions that were rooted in the ego. The world banking system, the military-industrial complex, all these fear-based corporations, those are the effects of the ego's reign, which is done. And so we're watching that house of cards naturally come down, not very gracefully because it doesn't have an exit clause, but nevertheless, it's done. I love what David Wilcock calls these energies. He calls them the powers that were.
Right.
So it's up to us to decide together what's going to come in to replace them.
Right. And then, so one of the secrets or one of the keys to this would be, rather than focusing on the disaster that's in process now as a result of aligning with something that's not real, we are in the position of creating the vision in the future that does not include all of those separation fields and the suffering and so on. Productive to come from spirit and be creating what we choose in our future realm, which may have nothing to do with the ones that we've known about or seen or recurred over billions and trillions of years.
Yes, and given that the outcome is already, you know, in the bag, so to speak, all we can truly do is save time and reduce suffering in the meantime, and that's a wonderful game to play.
Yes. Very nice. Well, that seems like a good place for us to segue into the end of the show, even though I could just talk to you for hours. You're just a wonderful guest, and I love talking to you.
Oh, it's mutual.
I think everybody will agree with me on that one.
Thank you, Lance. I've enjoyed myself immensely.
Oh, wonderful. Well, how can people find you and get your books and, you know, check out your resources and so on and so forth?
The website is bluesunenergetics, one word, .net. I believe if they go to .com, they'll be sent over to .net anywhere.
No.
And the books are right on the homepage with the links through to Amazon and Barnes & Noble. We also have a page where we describe our private sessions, and we love to work with individuals. It's typically an hour and a half of personal in-depth involvement. We have a system of dowsing that you experienced earlier today we call mind field repatterning. And this is a system that we've developed and is rooted in these principles of non-duality, and we have a certification program in this technique now. Live classes, as well as working with us over the internet. We have another course that we offer that's coming up soon called Soulful Communication, and this is a course in how to really receive people and listen to them as spirits and to facilitate transformations through relationship. And that particular course also leads towards a license as a spiritual health coach.
Well, Dave, thank you so much, and I look forward to having you back again on the show.
Many blessings to you and to all your listeners.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.